the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it in. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Coach G. Today's guest will be Michigan State's Tom Izzo, who could have the preseason number one team in the country. Why? Because our other guest today will be Miles Bridges, returning for his sophomore season. Could have gone out and been a lottery pick, one of the most explosive players in all of college basketball, but he will be returning and he'll be joining us in a while. But before I get to that, Courtside with Coach G is usually Courtside with Katz and Coach G, and obviously Andy Katz is not with us today. And Andy Katz, to me, when you look at the journalism business and basketball, quote-unquote, insiders and journalists, Andy Katz basically set the standard. He is what all other basketball journalists are compared to. And, you know, as my partner here in Courtside with Katz and Coach G, I learned so much from him. And, you know, the one thing I think when I think about Andy Katz is some people are liked and some people are respected. Very few people are both liked and respected. And Andy Katz, he was both. And he will continue to be both, because if you think about what he brings to the game of basketball, he brings a view and information without an agenda. And that is so rare in, quote-unquote, insiders and journalists. He's liked and respected by the coaches, the players, and everyone who's involved in the game. And obviously he'll be missed, and no doubt someone will be very fortunate when Andy Katz signs on with them and once again does what he does so well, and that's sharing his insight, his experience, and his relationships with the listening audience. So Andy Katz, one of the best there is, and we'll miss him here at Courtside with Coach G. But let's move on to why we're here. Courtside with Coach G, we talk about the game of basketball, the players, the coaches, and the issues. And this week, the combine starts. And when I think of the NBA combine, I think of opportunity for players to show who they are, how they win, and how they can help an NBA team. And the new rules, how they're put together, they allow players to test their value and see where they stand. Now, there's a couple things. The NBA draft's like a game of musical chairs. And what I mean by that is when the music stops, there's got to be enough seats left. Unfortunately, when you look at this list of players that have put their name in with agents, when the music stops, a number of these players, there will no longer be a seat. Will there be a seat in Europe? Possibly. Will there be a seat in the D-League? Probably. But I'm not sure, in my opinion, playing in the D-League, even with a two-way contract, because let's face it, there's going to be 62-way contracts. And what I mean by that is a contract where you can play in the D-League and still get paid by that NBA team. After those 60 spots are filled, what is that young player going to do? Say a freshman that leaves early, doesn't get drafted, doesn't get a two-way contract, and all of a sudden he's out on his own. And in 3 and 4 years from now, maybe he's not an NBA player. Maybe that transition to go overseas doesn't fit because Europe's not for everyone. And the money over there isn't what people perceive it to be. What happens then? So to me, this game of musical chairs is a dangerous one for some young people, because when you leave that school, especially so early, do you then have the support system when you need to come back? Will you have the money when you come back to finish your education, to build that network, to open up doors to your future so that you can have a productive life after basketball? So great opportunity to combine. It's great that the draft is not, the decision doesn't have to be made till after the combine. But I really do think these players that are going, listen and hear the information that you're given. Don't listen to a runner. Don't listen to an agent. Don't listen to a guy that's going to tell you what you want to hear. Listen to the voice of the NBA. If someone says, you're not ready, this is what you need to work on, then have the understanding that take a step back and say, you know what? It's not about getting to the league. It's not about being there quicker. It's about having a career. And maybe one more year in school will give you a better opportunity not to play basketball, but to have a career. That maturity, that experience, and especially with the salary cap, rookie salary cap going up, you might even, like one of our guests today, Miles Bridges, end up making more money by having that great year. And there's nothing wrong with being a 21-year-old senior or a 21-year-old junior. Ask Buddy Hield. Ask Denzel Valentine. There's a lot of success stories where guys finished and played, maybe to their junior year, maybe to their senior year. Not only did they get drafted in a better position, but then they were positioned to have not a to make a team, but to have a career. I'd like to welcome in Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo. And Tom, it's been an interesting offseason for you. Let's go back to last season first, though. Last season, you dealt with a lot of injuries, a lot of adversity. You lose Gavin Schilling. You lose Ben Carter. Miles Bridges goes down for a period of time. I mean, it seems like each and every day you had a different lineup. How difficult was it keeping your team in the present, keeping them moving forward throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, well, and you're right, Seth. And then the last half of the Big Ten, we lost Aaron Harris, you know, who was their starting two guard for 2 years. So it was bizarre. It was almost surreal, you know. And by the way, some good news happened yesterday. We did get Ben Carter his sixth year, which I know, you knew the dad a little bit. Mm-hmm. Great for the kid, you know. I'm hoping he'll be able to help some, but just to get him back and get him healthy would be a treat in itself. But, you know, it was interesting, something I'd never gone through, because I had the combination of, there's been years you have injuries, you've had them, everybody has them, but injuries and then playing four freshmen or starting sometimes four, starting three all the time, that was a weird combination, you know, and one that I think will make me a better coach down the road, but it made me older during the time.
you talk about those freshmen, and, you know, you haven't had a team where you had to start three and four freshmen and coach that many young guys and rely on that many young guys. What was that like, and how did you have to change as you realized, wait, this is a different group?
Well, I called Kel Perry a few times just to get a, I really did too, just to get a insight on how to do it. I mean, I've always played freshmen. I've started a freshman or two, but you know, for the most part, we've been more like the Notre Dames or the Villanovas, you know, where guys come in and, you know, you got juniors and seniors a lot and you bring in your freshmen like a Deontay Davis who can help you and even start. But, you know, you got four guys around them. This time we had our four freshmen around one other guy, you know. So, you know, in Bridges, you knew what you were getting when he came in. You've had a feel on Langford. You know, Cassius Winston, it took a little longer, but I think he's really starting to come on. And the surprise guy was Nick Ward, who we thought, you know, would be a year away, and he played pretty well, at least offensively. So it was different. It was some of it was kind of exciting and fun, and some of it was frustrating because, you know, you felt like you were still having the same kind of practices in February that you were having in October, and I guess that's what happens with young teams.
How do you balance that? Like, you know, I mean, how do you balance it when, you know, you don't have that eight, well, you know, maybe Tum Tum's a dominant leader, but you don't have that Forbes, Valentine, you know, where those guys know you lose Schilling. He would have been a guy that could have helped coach the locker room. How do you do that with so many young guys?
That's a great way to put it. And what I learned is Aaron Harris did a better job than I thought. And yet when you lose him in February then and beginning of February, end of January, whenever it was, you know, so I had actually no seniors, Alvin Ellis, who hadn't played much up until this year. And then Tom is definitely that diamond in the rough leader, but not one of the top six, seven players, you know, talented players. So, It was unique. Tom helped a lot. I think my staff had to do more. But it helps when you have a guy like Miles Bridges, who I said all along, I told you during the year, was my, you know, my blue-collar superstar, because he was not a high-maintenance McDonald's guy. Not that everyone are, but a lot of them are. And he just wasn't, and neither was Langford. So I got lucky a little bit, too, to be honest with you.
So the season ends, you find a way to grind this team to the NCAA tournament by closing and playing a bunch of games down the stretch that were like almost in sometimes elimination games. And the season ends, And here all of a sudden, Miles Bridges, who everyone tried to kind of consensus a lottery pick, who even though he battled some injuries, showed some signs of doing some incredible things.
Yeah.
How did that process play out, and what was your role in the process?
Oh, I just got on my hands and knees and begged him to stay, you know. So I got knee burns right now. No, I you know, in all honesty, Seth, and I did call you a couple times during it because Miles has been I call him a weirdo in a way, and, you know, right away people look at that as bad, but I just, during the whole year, you know, I assumed he was going. And then it came out, you know, he could have been 9 through 14, which you don't know that. But let's put it, he was in the top 20. He was probably a lottery pick, you know, whatever. Good enough that in this day and age, you're gone. And about in February, a couple times I said something jokingly, and he said, "Are you trying to get rid of me, coach?" You know, and I started to, my assistant said, "Hey, I don't know if he's going to go," you know. And so we didn't talk about it much. And when the season ended, he almost right away said, you know, he has no interest in talking to people. Or, you know, I said, "We want to talk to some agents. We got to get with your mom." His mom kind of wanted him to go, but she had been talking to agents, and, you know, all that goes. And so, I mean, he was not going from day one when the season ended. And it took 3 weeks because I really did try to research a little bit, even though he didn't want me to. And then I caught myself, Seth, almost trying to talk him. He had to prove to me why he didn't want to go. When he said, "Well, I want to try to get to a Final Four," I said, "Well, that's not a good reason, because a year ago, you know, Denzel and them were so good, and they got beat in the first game. And 2 years before that, with Payne and Harris, we were really good, and we got beat in the Elite Eight game." I said, "You know, I can't have you stay for something that's one in, you know, a thousand." And then he talked about, you know, wanting to get better and, you know, the D-League and things like that. And I started to at least go his way a little bit. And he started talking about his teammates and what he wanted to accomplish with them and that he actually likes school. He's doing well academically. So it took a long time to convince me, believe it or not. But once I finally talked to him one night and he said, "Coach, I know what I want to do." I said, "I know, but everybody wants you to go." And he said, "But I don't want to." And I said, "You know what? And I'm going to back you like that." So this was a weird case, Seth. I get blamed a lot for holding kids back. And trust me when I say this, this kid, I was half pushing out the door. I didn't think Deontay should have left last year. Didn't think he was quite ready. This kid, I do think mentally and physically, is more ready. Can he improve? I think as Magic, as different people told me, everybody could improve. You know, how many of those guys coming out had any impact on any of those teams that they were with? And so he decided to stay another year, and I think it'll make us a better team, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think you'll be a little smarter. How hard is it? You know, like you said something crazy. Like here you're worried about, you want to push him out the door because of the people's perception saying, well, you know, Izzo doesn't let his guys leave. Well, we all know that guys make their own decisions.
Yeah.
But here's a kid who enjoys his teammates, enjoys college, and wants to leave a mark and have a legacy.
Yeah.
And yet, I know in our conversations that we had, you know, on the phone, you're like going, "Man, now people are going to use this against us in recruiting."
Yeah.
How does that work?
You know, well, it works because people are jerks. You know, I mean, people just want to assume things. You know, like I love Miles Bridges, but I'm at the point in my career, I've got 7 years left on my contract. You know, I don't need Miles Bridges to survive. He has to be a better team, but hey, we were a great team a couple of years ago with 3-4 pros, and then we were a great team a year ago, you know, with maybe not as many guys. And it's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get to be a great team. And I thought we were going to be real good without Miles coming back. But I will admit, I mean, he's a special player because he's a great player but a great kid. And I just got to the point where I said, you know, you get to a point sometimes where you got to live with yourself. And I want the world for Miles. His mother knows that. She was great about it at the end. She told me why she wanted him to go, you know. And of course, it's more financial and everything, you know. And then the worry of injuries. But you can't live your life that way, as Miles taught me. So, you know, usually, Seth, we're supposed to teach these kids and mentor them and all this. This was one time when maybe the kid mentored the coach instead of vice versa, because he sold me on all the reasons that he thought were good. And I bet you that you and 90% of the other people out there would be proud of why he did it, not what he did. Mm-hmm. Kids can come or go, but he had a good base of reasons why he wanted to stay. And so now I got to make sure that we make the best of it.
Yeah, obviously a unique kid. That announcement right by Sparty, how'd that happen?
Oh, that was a unique thing. I had called a couple of my players, because he had called some players to talk to him, and called Gary Harris and Valentine, and then I called Draymond, and I said, Draymond, I think he's going to stay, you know. He goes, hey, he goes, you can't have just a press conference. He goes, that's not what we're all about. And he says, you got to invite the whole, you know, the group. And when he came here a couple of years ago when they won the world championship, people were bugging him about taking a picture with the trophy, because he brought the trophy back with him because it was a big football game that weekend. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Stanley Cup, you know, you get it for 2 days, I think. They bring a guy in with white gloves and he carries it around. And so Draymond took pictures at Sparty, and pretty soon there's a couple thousand people lined up to get a picture with him. So he says, you got to have it at Sparty. I says, it's cold here yet, you know? He goes, ah, they go to football there when it's raining. He goes, so sure enough, it started out raining that day, but I got back and I called my AD, thought it was a great idea to share it with the group, you know, with the student body. And it was kind of unlike Miles, because he's kind of a shy kid in some ways, but he enjoyed it. His family enjoyed it. The people enjoyed it. I sure as hell enjoyed it. It was real, you know. It was kind of like, this is who he is. And his line that he tweeted out was, you know, he's got an announcement to make, and it's not about him, it's about us. Was kind of, now it's taking on a life of its own around here. But that's who he is. He really, really is.
How are the rest of the teammates? Because you always worry about, you know, obviously that much attention, yet he's kind of a humble superstar. How did the other guys handle it?
Well, you know, I really learned about that. I said my defining moment on Miles Bridges and Aaron Harris. You know, this was Harris's year to be Batman, maybe. And, you know, and Miles took over as Batman, and Harris had to be Robin, you know. And when he got hurt at Purdue and I walked out on the court and Miles is standing over him in tears, I just realized what an impact Aaron had. And I asked Aaron about it, and he says, Coach, Miles is, you know, he's such a good kid and he's so team oriented. So I think Miles helped bridge that. The relationship, the chemistry of our team is what got us 20 wins, because we had so much adversity. I didn't think we were worthy of a 20 win team, but I think the togetherness, and that's now going to carry forward, because the two kids we got coming in, Xavier Tillman and of course Jaren Jackson, and Miles has talked to Jaren a lot, and, you know, kind of a similar kid, you know, a really good student, really good kid, and I think a really good player. So we're going to be helped there greatly with both guys.
Spinning it forward, your team next year, I mean, you get Schilling back, you get Ben Carter, you know, depending on how he's back and depending on how healthy.
Right.
So you've got a great ball screen defender in Schilling. You got Carter, who can, you know, who has experience per se. You get your core group of young guys back, Tum-Tum, Hogan, McQuaid. This team here, what do you do this summer to make sure that they all stay on the same page and understand, you know, playing for the good of the group?
God, your coaching side of you is coming out, not your ESPN side here. You know, that's exactly right. I mean, the big question will be, can we stay as humble? Can we stay as focused? Do we not let all the distractions and things get to you? But it's kind of neat, because getting Schilling back, who was out with a knee injury, as an appreciation for what it's like to miss. Carter has been an unbelievable kid. I mean, I was going to keep him here even if he didn't get his 6 year. The kid came in August, and again, you knew him a little bit. You knew the family, maybe. Your brother did. He's just been an unbelievable teammate, and he brings some. He's a good player that brings a very high basketball IQ. I don't know how healthy he'll be, but he's going to have plenty of time. I mean, he'll be ready to go in September, It's going to take some months to get back, but if we can get a little out of him, and we'll get a lot out of the locker room, and then I think the two guys that too have to improve that will are McQuaid and Goins, and both those guys were out all last summer and missed the entire summer with injuries. So those two guys getting back and playing like they did, especially McQuaid the year before, gives us a lot. And then does Cassius Winston take that big step, which I think he's going to. He's getting stronger already because he's got a chance to be really good. And Tom can be the straw that stirs the drink a little bit. But, you know, with Langford and with the four freshmen back. And you know, a guy like Ward's got to get better too. I mean, he was a very good offensive player. But ball screens, you know, as I told him, my wife could guard him better than he did, and he's got to improve in that area.
Loopy's got good lateral quickness.
She does. That's but not as good as you need to guard the people we got to guard. So I think his improvement, you know, he's still done a hell of a job with his body, but now he's got to, you know, the difference between winning games and trying to win championships mm-hmm. is you got to be better defensively. And we got away with some offensive things with a couple guys. If Winston and Ward get better defensively, I think we go from a great team to maybe an elite team, and that's kind of that's what the summer's for.
How's the schedule? I mean, this year, absolutely absurd with the travel.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at
next year? Absurd in a different way. You know, we do play Duke in Chicago in the Tournament of Champions, and then we go out to this Phil Knight, his 80th birthday, and it's the two top Nike teams from each school. So it'll be Duke and Carolina, I think Florida and Kentucky, Villanova. It's going to be in there, Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, it's going to be a lot of great teams, and it's two-team tournament out there, two separate, but it's going to be 16 very, very good teams. And then when we come back, we've got ACC Big Ten Challenge, and then we have two Big Ten games on Saturday and Monday that following week. So in like 12, 13 days, I think we play six, which could be all highly ranked teams. So different schedule other than going to Portland, not as much travel, but probably more competition in a shorter period of time. But at least we'll be a little more experienced for that this year.
You got to straighten your AD out, obviously.
I know, I do.
Out of control, except you do the schedule.
I know, sometimes I do, but this Big Ten thing, because we're going a week earlier because we're playing the Big Ten tournament at Madison Square Garden a week earlier, and that's kind of throwing a monkey wrench into those of us that are locked into some of these things, like tournament championships, ACC challenge. You know, it makes it a little more difficult, but it is what it is, and the schedule is sometimes hurt me a little bit, but never killed me, and I think at the end made us better. So last year we survived, and that was maybe the toughest one to survive in my 22 years.
No doubt. Well, Tom, thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to speaking with Miles, and have a great off season. Make sure those guys stay healthy, and I look forward to seeing you sometime in July.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get together, Seth, and take good care of Miles. I think you'll love him. He's a great kid, and I think going to be one of the premier players and definitely one of the premier player people in our game next year.
Thanks, bud.
Enjoy them.
You're the best. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. We'll be back in a minute with Michigan State's Miles Bridges. But first, with Mother's Day just around the corner, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about 1-800-Flowers.com. Mother's Day is just around the corner, and the countdown clock is ticking. Don't miss out on the opportunity to deliver a smile that only comes from the most gorgeous of bouquets. This Mother's Day, 1-800-Flowers.com has beautiful bouquets that are guaranteed to show mom just how much you appreciate her. Right now, when you order a dozen multicolored roses for just $29.99, 1-800-Flowers will give you another dozen plus a vase absolutely free. That's 50% off the original price. With a bright and beautiful mix of premium roses in rainbows of colors, these blooms are guaranteed to show mom just how much she's loved. These breathtaking roses from 1-800-Flowers are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. A dozen multicolored roses for just $29.99, plus another dozen and a vase for free, is an amazing offer. But it expires Thursday. Every bouquet is backed by the 1-800-Flowers 100% smile guarantee. So whether you're surprising your wife, aunt, sister, or mother, don't settle for anything less than 1-800-Flowers.com. To order a dozen multicolored roses plus an extra bouquet and vase for just $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click the radio icon and enter the code COURTSIDE. That's 1-800-Flowers.com. Code COURTSIDE. Hurry. Offer ends Thursday. Welcome back to Courtside with Coach G. I am excited for this guest, and it's Miles Bridges, Michigan State's rising sophomore, who had a terrific freshman year. And Miles, I got the chance to know you and be around you guys a little bit this past season, getting a chance to interview you actually prior to the start of the season. And let's go backwards first. What did you think of your freshman year? What did you learn this year as a freshman playing college basketball for Coach Izzo at Michigan State?
We went through a lot of adversity this year, so I learned a lot. I learned how to keep my composure, but the main thing I learned how to do was win, because how many injuries we had, and we didn't have any experience, so I really learned how to win.
Your relationship with Coach Izzo, I almost, and Coach and I are very close, but watching you two guys interact, and we know he's a passionate guy and he coaches you guys hard. What makes Coach Izzo different?
Just his passion for the game. I mean, he cares for his players on and off the court, but he loves to win, so he'll do anything to win, so that just makes him different.
And when he has those out-of-body experiences and kind of getting after you, whether it's on a shot or a decision, when you're coming off the court, what's that like?
It's funny sometimes, but I know he's just trying to yell at us just to make us better. So whenever he does that, I don't pay it any mind.
I know. Well, you know that, how much he cares about you guys and loves you guys and just wants to see you guys be the best version of yourselves. Now, you know, as the season went along, you had your injuries, you had your bumps in the road, you got it going at the end of the season. Season ends, you got 8,000 people pulling at you, man. I mean, like, everyone's trying to be your guy, give you advice. You know, what are you going to do? Most people said, man, Miles is going to be a lottery pick. I mean, he's got to go. Tell me a little bit about just that process. You know, what was the one reason? If you had to say one thing, you know, I stayed because, why did you stay?
Just because I love Michigan State. I want to do great things there. And I feel like with the team coming in next year, we can.
Yeah, when you know, I heard you talk about your teammates. You know, when you were going through the process, did you talk to your teammates? Was it something that you had to look in the mirror and say, you know, what is best for me? Like, when you say you want to accomplish things, what do you want to accomplish?
Yeah, I talked to my teammates, and we all got the same goal. So I feel like we can accomplish that goal of trying to win a national championship, win Big Ten awards. We just want to have a great season this year, an unforgettable season.
And your game, like, you know, coming back this coming season – You know, you could have been a lottery pick. You could be who knows what you might be the number one pick in the draft next year. What do you want to do with your game this coming season and this summer? And you know, do you have a plan moving forward of saying, all right, this is where I am right now. This is the guy I want to be a year from now.
Yeah, I have a lot of goals for this summer. I'm really trying to work on all aspects of my game, so I can attack defense on all sides. I'm really working on my defense, too. I'm just working on all aspects, just like I have an all-around game this season.
Mm-hmm. And, Coach, looks like with the recruiting class you guys have coming in, with obviously Nick Ward and the guys you have and Cassius and Josh, the guys coming back, you're going to pretty much be able to play more three. What does that mean, just playing that position full-time?
I have to get my stamina right after. I can't get tired because you know how Coach Izzo wants us to run. I got to be able to guard threes, twos, and I need to get my ball handling right. So that's what I've been working on this summer.
And you know, when you talk about your guys, I mean, you came in with a freshman class that was highly touted. Now you guys are sophomores. How much pressure is Coach going to put on you guys to lead that next young group coming in?
Yeah, us with Tom Tom, Gavin, and Ben, we got to be the leaders because, I mean, we've been through it. I know we're only sophomores, but that last season, it put a lot of experience on us. So we have to lead the freshmen coming in and help them learn how to win too.
And when you talk about Ben, we just saw that yesterday Ben got his sixth year of eligibility back or seven, whatever. I forget exactly how it is because of his injury. A guy like Ben Carter who's had a lot of adversity, what does he bring to your team?
He brings a lot of heart to the team. He's a very passionate guy. He's a stretch four. He can hit threes. He can score down low. He's a big part for us. So I was very happy for him when he got that grant.
How was it when you made your announcement to come back right in front of Sparty? How cool was that?
It's like one of the coolest things I ever did in my life. Draymond actually came up with the idea, but it was really surreal for me, including all the people that came out. So I was very surprised at that.
And Coach Izzo told me you stayed to the very end and signed every last autograph of every person that wanted one to come there. Was that your plan going in?
No, that wasn't my plan, but when I seen all the people that came and waited in the cold and supported me for my decision, I mean, that's the least I could do for them.
And your family, are they excited about your decision and your process and the season moving forward?
Yeah, well, my family, they're very excited for the season. They are always supportive of what I did. That's why I feel like I got a strong supporting cast. My mom, my sister, my dad, I mean, they're always going to support me no matter what. So I'm happy for them.
How were you able to keep all the static away? Because, you know, I mean, like, look, dude, you're a good player. Just the way the culture of our game today, there's people pulling at you and trying to kind of – how did you keep all that static away and just say, you know what, I am who I am. I'm my own guy. I don't have to listen to anyone else. I know who I am. I know what I want to do. How hard was that?
It wasn't that hard. I mean, I just stayed away from my phone, and I understood that it's my decision, it's my life. So I had to make the decisions for myself, and I couldn't let people make decisions for me because I have to live with the decision, not them. So it wasn't that hard for me because I knew what I was going to do all along. So.
Well, summer starts. You got how many weeks off before you go back to school for summer school and working on your game?
We got to go back June 5th, but I've been working on my game in my hometown.
So there's no days off?
No, sir.
All right, well, that's good. Well, Miles, let me tell you something. What you're doing, you're sending a message. One last thing. You know that, obviously, the NBA rookie salary cap goes up next year. Did that come into play at all, or is it just, man, I love my teammates. Tum Tum's my guy. Cassius is my guy, and I'm going to share this experience with them. Where was that at?
Yeah, that wasn't a big part of it. I just wanted to make memories of my teammates that will last a lifetime. And I wanted to, like I said, have an unforgettable season for Michigan State because I feel like they deserve it. I mean, we went through a lot last year, so I feel like this is going to be a big season for us.
Well, you do. I'll tell you one thing. One thing about the Izzone and the fans of Michigan State, I mean, it seemed almost in the middle of the season after you guys kind of recovered that those people would not let you down and they stood beside you throughout those games when you guys were fighting to get in the tournament. How intense did that get? Because, you know, you wanted to keep that streak alive of NCAA tournament bids.
Yeah, every game was like an NCAA tournament game. And like you said, the fans, they stick beside us. I feel like we have one of the best fan bases in the nation. But, yeah, they stick beside us, and every game was big for us. So we play every game like a playoff game.
Well, I'll tell you what, you did a great job with it. And I look forward to coming up there preseason next year again and sitting down and visiting with you and you know, talking about you and your teammates. Because the thing that impressed me the most is that your guys' core unit, your team. I've been around this thing a long time, coach for 36 years and 22 as a head coach. I've never seen a group of players so close and so genuinely caring for each other. How did that happen?
We just do a lot of things off the court. When you come to Michigan State, you know it's a brotherhood. So we take that brotherhood to another level because everybody that comes to Michigan State is family. Whether they leave, transfer, they're still going to be family. So I feel like that's part of the Michigan State culture.
Well, that's awesome. Miles Bridges, wishing you nothing but the best. Have an unbelievable summer. Enjoy your teammates. Enjoy the journey next year because you came back for all the right reasons. It's all about the team. It's all about each other. It's all about shared experiences and doing something special. So you got a lot of fans, man, because you get it. And very few guys at your age do get it. So good luck. Stay healthy. And look forward to seeing you at the beginning of next season.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
Appreciate Miles Bridges giving some insight on why he decided to stay and his goals moving forward for not only himself, but the Michigan State basketball program. Now, Joshy.
Yes.
The student section, baby.
Yeah.
Bring it. What do we got?
It's an off-season student section. A lot of the kids are away on break now, so it's a little bit of a smaller student section. But, of course, someone who's always
camped
out there.
No rushing to court? We're not rushing to court?
We're rushing to court, but we're only doing it with two guys. It'll still be a court storm.
Maybe unofficial.
And, of course, one of the guys who always storms the court.
ID Kelly's got to be in the house.
ID Kelly won, of course. Got
to be in the house.
And he wants to know, Seth, are you seeing more of an emphasis on shooting skill with a focus on the three-pointer at the high school level?
I think what you're doing is you're seeing people use the three-point line. And, you know, when you use the three-point line, obviously then all your drills in whether it's high school or AAU basketball set up off of that. But I also think there's a trickle-down effect. When you watch the NBA, when you watch college, NBA teams are doing a great job of using three-point line. You've seen, the Steph Currys of the world knocking jumpers down, the Klay Thompson's knocking jumpers down, LeBron improving his three-point shot. And that kind of trickles down. Then more teams are playing with space. More teams are playing off of concepts. More teams are playing where it's more of a drive and kick, extra pass game. There are fewer legitimate low post players. So what do you have to have? You got to get paint touches. How do you get paint touches? You drive the basketball. And if you compress the defense and make two passes, you're going to have open jump shots. So I think what you're seeing right now is you're seeing the trickle-down effect of the NBA. You're seeing a trickle-down effect of people playing off of spacing and concepts, and you're seeing people adapting to that line. And the more threes you shoot, the better off you are at it. And then finally, more teams are playing with stretch threes or stretch fours or threes at fours. And what I mean by that is there's nothing wrong with playing a big, small forward at the four, opening up the court, playing four out, playing more positionless basketball, and you're seeing more of that again. In the NBA, trickles down to college basketball, and now it's trickled down to high school basketball.
Also got this question, Seth, from Anthony at @anth_7. And Anthony would like to know, with UNC winning yet another title last month and getting to their second straight title game, can a real case be made that the UNC style of recruiting beats the one-and-done style of recruiting?
Well, the UNC style of recruiting has really been due to what has happened, with this NCAA investigation over the last few years and the lack of closure. So it's really impacted, Carolina's ability to recruit one and dones because of the uncertainty of not knowing you're going to play in the NCAA tournament. So, to me, look, Carolina's always going to get players. To me, more importantly, these back-to-back championship games and another national championship, you need a hook in recruiting. And once the NCAA investigation is finally over, whatever that closure will be, Carolina's winning a lot of games. And they are developing players. Justin Jackson, think about where he is right now. Bryce Johnson last year, his development. You look at Tony Bradley, potentially a one-and-done player. And I think they finally have that other hook. It's not the one-and-done of coach of John Calipari. It's not that Olympic basketball and USA basketball of Coach K that's been so successful. But now they have their hook. You know what their hook is? They're winning consistently, getting to the Final Four, getting to championship games. And their style of play is one that players like to play. So I think their hook is developing once again. Once that NCAA stuff is cleared up, I think Carolina will go back to being Carolina, recruiting the best players in the country year in and year out. And they'll end up with their share of one-and-dones.
and our hook, Seth, is that we let you get involved in the show by asking us questions and submitting
I see where
your
going.
Comments to us. Just make sure you use the hashtag student section.
Wow, Jeff, how about that? Is that called a segue?
Yeah, that's called a professional segue for the people.
Well, you are a pro working with an amateur.
Well, I try.
I'd like to thank Coach Izzo, Miles Bridges, and you, the listener, for tuning in to the first Courtside with Coach G. And we're going to be here each and every month. So, Josh, how do people continue to listen to this?
Yeah, well, obviously they're doing a pretty good job already if they found
this
episode.
If they're listening now, you think they can find us again?
Yeah, I think they've figured it out. But just because they're listening, they might not be subscribers, and that's the key. If you go onto the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts or any other podcast vendor that you prefer, make sure you subscribe to us, especially in the ESPN app. That's where you get alerts every time we publish a show. It's a way to be an insider of sorts for the Courtside Podcast, which, as you mentioned, Seth, will be coming at you about once every month throughout the offseason.
Around once a month, and they're going to be a little bit different courtside. Mm-hmm. We're going to have coaches, we're going to have players, and we're going to have people that impact the game. We'll talk about the issues, and we'll also talk about what's going on in the summer.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Coach G. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including daily NBA conversation and the NBA Lockdown podcast, available in the NBA category in the ESPN app. Courtside with Coach G.